Shalom everyone, and today we're studying the book of Deuteronomy, the first parasha, Parashat Dvarim. And this parasha, and especially the whole book, is aiming at one very important topic that is always relevant. There are two main problems for that humanity is dealing with, not only today, although today it is very much emphasized. One is post-traumatic syndrome, which means people deal and go through huge dramas and traumas, and it's almost impossible to grow, being raised, develop as a human being in a normal society without having traumas. Yes, everybody is trying to talk about a perfect environment in which it's violent-free, injustice-free, that there is no abuse, not from the parents, not from siblings, not from neighbors, friends, school, teachers, all kinds of stuff. It looks like this is almost impossible, almost impossible. So the fact that people go through trauma, I think trying to create a perfect trauma-free environment. Remember, you know, as a parent, you have little kids, you send them to a kindergarten, and your heart is like, how can I protect them 24/7? From all the traumas in the world. It could be bullying in school, kindergarten, either by the teacher, either by the other kids. This is like you don't know where it's going to come from, and it is always coming somewhere. People go through traumas. This is a given. And what's interesting is that the Torah is this dealing with that issue and addressing it. That's one thing. The other thing, the second thing, which is a derivative of the first thing, is one is to overcome traumas that you feel that was caused to you without any justice. You didn't deserve it. That's one. And the second, that I think it's a family member, or the first one, is guilt. The guilt that I messed up, and therefore I do not deserve to succeed. I do not deserve to have a nice, successful, fulfilling life. Both are two sides of the same coin. One is that if I was hurt and I cannot overcome that hurt, and I cannot forgive and forget all who I blame to be the cause of that pain, that's a huge, huge obstacle over my road to completion, to success. And the second issue is if I don't let's say I am capable, let's say, of forgiving whoever hurt me. What about forgiving myself for hurting my own interest? And that's guilt. So there are two sides of, let's say, the trauma that blocks the road for success. One is forgiving others, to forgiving myself. Both of them, I think, are being discussed, especially in this parasha. And more than that, the whole book of Dvarim. Why? Why is it so, so important? And the answer is like this. The last words that we read for last week's parasha, Parashat Mas'ei, they are basically not just the last words of Masei, they're the last words of the main body of the Torah. And I spoke about it last week. The Torah main body is four books only: Genesis, Bereshit, Exodus, Shmot, Leviticus, Vayikra, Numbers, Bamidbar. How do I know? Basically, the Torah is completed at the end of Bamidbar. And it says, Ele ha-mitzvot v'chukim. These are the mitzvot, these are the laws that Moses gave to the nation of Israel. In the name of God, the basic idea of what the Torah is about, it's completed in that moment. So what is the book of Deuteronomy? It says really clearly, very clearly. You read in Deuteronomy 1:1, Ele ha-dvarim asher diber Moshe el kol Yisrael. These are the words that Moses spoke to the whole of Israel just before he left. And it says really clearly, he started on the new moon of Shvat, Aquarius, and he completed on his birthday, which was the 7th of Adar, 5 weeks later. Then he completed on the same day. It says, today I am 120 years old. That is at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, which means this is called Deuteronomy, which is a secondary to the Torah, or the ancient name for it, Mishneh Torah, secondary or repetition of the Torah. Basically, the Torah, which is the word of God given through Moses, this is completed at Parashat Maaseh. We just read it yesterday. Okay, however, the book of Deuteronomy, which is the repetition or the completion or the summary, and more important, this is the legacy of Moses to the Israelite nation and to the world just before he walks up the mount and disappears forever. So, basically, what Moses is giving, he's not giving us a lesson. He's giving us more than a legacy. He's giving us an injection, a support, supplies that we can hold on to till the end of the journey. And last parasha was Maaseh, journeys. In that parasha, we learned that all what we are as humans, we are in a journey that is divided to many, many small journeys. And there's only one purpose for the journey. The purpose is to transform darkness into light, bitterness into sweet, to transform judgment into mercy, to transform the evil into good, to transform whatever is vicious into merciful and loving. Basically, the world was created almost perfect. We, humanity, were given the challenge to perfect it so we can basically enhance or establish the image of God that is inside each one of us. If the world was perfect, there won't be any chance for that. We will be useless. And we, as humans that were created in the image of God, we hate to be useless. If you feel like I would prefer to be useless, it means that like a big red light saying you are in danger. Why? Something is hurt and you're not working on it. You're not fixing it. And that can be either you feel so guilty because you messed up so much and you feel so much guilt and blame and shame that you don't believe that you deserve to do anything good. This is what the whole book of Dvarim is about. Why? Because Parashat Dvarim is being read always adjacently, connected or just few days before or on the day of the ninth of Av, the day that is the peak of the control of the snake, as the Zohar says, over humanity. From that moment, as we learned in Parashat Pinchas, and also a little bit last week, as we learned, what happened is that from the night of Av, that is almost totally under the control of the snake, and therefore, the Zohar says, we do not eat or drink on Tisha B'Av, not because we are mourning the disasters that happened on the ninth of Av, not because of that. We are not eating and drinking on Tisha B'Av because on that day, the snake is controlling all the venues of light. And if you eat, you eat the snake. If you drink the snake. If you study Torah, you connect to the snake energy. And what is a snake? This is the core of the evil inclination of the dark angel of reality. The dark angel of the reality is there for us to transform him. However, we do not want to strengthen it. Okay? Now, from the ninth of Av, it's the countdown. Okay, because 2 months exactly after, we're celebrating Yom Kippur, which is the only day of which the snake has no control whatsoever. What's interesting is these two are the only 2 days that are complete fasting from before sunset till after the stars come out the next day. So there are only 2 days like this in the Hebrew calendar. The night of Av and Yom Kippur. The countdown is because as we come to the ninth of Av, most of the year is already done. Most of the tikkun that we had to face for this year is already exposed, given to us, and we either managed to take the challenge and make the transformation properly, or we mess it up. We missed the opportunity and we're just lamenting our mishap, our failure. And now, because of that, from the night of Av, the countdown is starting towards the generation, the creation of the coming year. And you need to look forward for the coming year as a great opportunity of new ventures opening up, new hope opening up. And for this, you need the Parasha of Dvarim and Shabbat Chazon. Okay? And now I'll explain how can you find it in the Torah itself. Why is it important? Because this is like the basic. Every human being goes through traumas. Every human being goes through failures. Every human being is amazingly talented in failing, in falling, in misleading, in making mistakes. We are so good at it. The question is, after you fell, are you able to get up? And King Solomon says, Sheva yipol tzadik, a righteous person will fall 7 times and rise each time all over again. Why? Because a righteous person is a person that does not allow the guilt to take over. Therefore, he rises all over again. He gives it another trial. But he's a righteous person, supposed to be perfect. So again, it says very clearly, En tzadik she'aseh tov v'lo yachta, there's no righteous person who will do only good without sinning. So the perception that we are supposed to be perfect, the perception that we should supposed to follow only perfect people, and here comes the Tanakh, that's all the sources, and the Mishnah, and the Zohar, and the Talmud, and all the study, they say nobody's perfect. Nobody, whoever says he's perfect, he will be lying about other things too. First of all, to himself. We are not here to be perfect. We're here to perfect. The perfection is our job. As long as you live in a body, you have some perfections to achieve. Not as a goal of being a perfect, but the goal is perfecting. Because the moment you become perfect, you're jobless. You have no reason to be here on earth. So that's why you leave. If you're here, there's some hope. What's the hope? To find another imperfection, another trauma, another pit, another darkness to overcome and transform into light. Otherwise, what am I doing over here? So, how do we see it in the text? So, first of all, we see it as there are a few ways, but if you read the text in the beginning of the parasha, Ela advarim asher diber Moshe el kol Yisrael, these are the words that Moses spoke to the whole of Israel, Be'er HaYarden, across the Jordan, Bamidbar, in the desert. Hey, we said across the Jordan, that's not enough. No, in the desert, Barava, in the prairies. Where are we? Across the Jordan, in the desert, in the prairies, Mosuf, in front of the Red Sea, Bein Paran uVein Tofel, in between Paran and Tofel, which is the south of the Negev, VeLavan veChatzerot veDizahav, and it brings another name and another. Just a second. What is this list of places? All of them geographically are far from each other. So Rashi, the greatest commentator from France, the 11th century, says as follows. And Rashi, again, he brings ancient resources of commentary. So Rashi says, basically what Moses is doing over here, he is giving all those names of all those places that the Israelites were not in their best. Okay, you can see it also in the Unculus, the ancient Aramaic translation. Elepit Gamaya Dimalil Moshe, these are the words that Moses spoke. I'm reading the Aramaic. Ve'al de'argizu be'mesha, because they angered God, or in all of these places that Moses is mentioning. So Moses is basically mentioning all of those places that the Israelites were, you know, the least to say, they were not at their best. So it's the all the places they complained, they were not appreciating all the manna and all of that place. So, but Moses, because Rashi is saying, because he's respecting the Israelites, remember. He's leaving in after 40 years of leadership. He's leaving the world forever. Okay? In 5 weeks. Now you owe no one anything. Just tell them in their face. You held it for 40 years. That's not Moses. He's teaching us an amazing lesson. He's not holding anything against them. On the contrary, what is he saying? You angered God. You didn't appreciate, you messed up in the most crucial places. Okay? You know, a lot of people say, you see, the Torah itself is saying how terrible the Israelites are. So, and more than that, Rabbi Azakluria is saying what Moshe Rabbeinu is telling us. When he's saying, when he's mentioning all of that, and he's mentioning in the verse 2, Achadasar Yom Mechorev, 11 days from Mount Sinai. But here he uses the word Chorev. It's another name for Mount Sinai, but why using the word Chorev and not saying Achadasar Yom Mesinai? So Rabbi Azaglo is saying Moses is telling us by hint. When we are talking about the journeys that you did from the Exodus till here, we spoke about them last week, the 42 journeys, those journeys were in a nutshell, they were kind of a inclusive form of as the Israelites were doing their journeys and they fell in all of these places, they were basically rehearsing the journey of all of humanity, the whole journey of humanity. What is the journey of humanity? There is a saying, when the world was created, the world was perfect. However, we were created, I mention it again, we were created in the image of God, which means we were created in the image of the desires, all the desires for all the bliss that God gave to us. Which means, if you don't desire for something, how can it be given to you and you will enjoy it? You cannot enjoy something you don't really crave for. So God created us as craving beings, beings of desire, lust. Okay? So, however, we also got God's image that the need to be independent and to be creative. So God had to destroy Leharev Chorev, to destroy the perfect world he created. Can you imagine? He created an amazing, perfect creation. We can see it when you raise your eyes from your daily troubles. The universe is amazing. If you see just whatever, wherever you look, macro, micro, you look at the stars, you look at people behaving, and you see how intricate it is and how wonderful it is, full of wonder. Doesn't mean it's amazingly perfect without a flaw. It's not like a Barbie room that everything is pink and okay, you know what I'm saying, but the intricacy and all the synchronicity. If you really have a clean mind, you will see miracles wherever you look at. Okay, however, God had to somehow destroy that perfection. That's called Chorev, says the Arizal, Rabbi Isaac Luria, that we're going to celebrate his anniversary in a few days this week. And he says, why 11 days? Because the disaster covered a certain chunk of the creation of the tree of life. And there are seven worlds that fell that are being hinted by, 42, the name 42, seven sentences. Each one of the seven combinations of the Ana Bekoach, the name of 42 letters, is according to one level that fell from above. Okay? And you can see the Arizal is saying in the first name, Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadik. Aleph Bet Gimel, okay? Aleph Bet Gimel Yud is how Aleph Bet the alphabet. And Yud is the perfection, and then Tatz. Tatz tav tzami, tzadik. Tatz means smashed into pieces. These seven levels in what is called Olam Nekudim, okay, in Adam Kadmon. That was a place, seven kings of Edom that smashed and fell. That's why it says Derech Har Seir, through Mount Seir, Edom. The seven kings of Edom and Seir that were killed, they symbolize those seven worlds that were smashed into pieces. And our job as human beings is to pick up those pieces and put them together, and by repairing it, recreating the perfection of humanity and the universe. But there were four more worlds that fell from above. They were torn, and that's the next sequence. Kuf Resh Ayin, Sin Tet Nun, Kuf Resh Ayin is to tear. There were four walls that were torn from above, in addition to the seven. 7 plus 4, 11. These are the 11 days from Chorev, from the destruction. Ad Kadesh Barnea, till everything will be holy all over again. So, what is this message? The message is, hello, do not expect this world to be perfect. More than that. More than that. I gave this example once. A person has a problem. You invite an expert to fix the problem. Why? He is advertising that he learned so many years and he has a lot of experience fixing this problem. You bring him out, you invite him to fix the problem. He sees the problem and he starts to complain how terrible and how upsetting and how is displeasing is the problem. How do you look at him? It's like, what? I invited you because it is upsetting and displeasing for me. I didn't invite you to tell me how displeasing it is. I invited you because you said that your goal, your mission is to fix that stuff. And if you're sitting and complaining together with me, that's very annoying. Okay? Now, as a human being, when we are facing one of those imperfections, upsetting as that could be, displeasing as that could be, why are we exposed to that flow? We are exposed to that flow because our mission is to fix it. We are the expert. We are the professional that has to learn how to fix it. So sometimes we've been shown the imperfection as students. So why do you show the students in class, the problem, you show it to them so they learn the problem in and out. They understand the problem. They analyze the problem. They know how to basically understand the problem. And the next stage is after you understand the problem, then you train yourself to fix it. That's when you're a student. When you are professional, you have to have one thing, my job, my calling, my expectation, my hope is that I am going to overcome that challenge. I'm going to fix it. And by this, I am manifesting, completing my calling. Okay? Why is it that I trained for so many years on a certain profession? So when I see the problem, I would know how to understand it, and I would, from knowing that, I will know also how to fix it. This is very weird when a professional that you're inviting sits in with you in front of a problem and he starts complaining with you. How do you look at him? What? So how do we basically step up to the plate? How do we basically accept the challenge and becoming the person we should become, not by falling, not by complaining. However, we should understand that we came to this world because it's broken. Chorev means shattered, broken, destroyed. And we came to this world to fix, correct, transform, improve, perfect whatever is on our journey. Why do you stumble upon it? Your responsibility. No, there are no incidents, no coincidence, which means there are coincidences. If it coincides, my path and the problem, okay, here it is for you. Fix it. Overcome it. Too hard? No. God never gives walnuts to people who are toothless. That's the saying. If you have the problem, you're facing the problem, it's yours to overcome. Okay? Kol ma shebiyadcha la'asot b'kochacha aseh. King Solomon said, if you have something, a problem, a challenge in front of you have the power to do that. Otherwise, why are you facing it? So Moses is mentioning all of those times that the Israelite nation failed to deal with the challenge. But how does he continue? How does he continue? After he gives all of those incidents in the background, already in verse 8, before that, verse 7, 6, the Lord our God, Adonai Eloheinu, diber elenu b'chorev. He spoke to us in Chorev, again using the word Chorev. We got the message. What is the message? You are here for doing tikkun olam. You're not here to complain about what's wrong. You're here to realize what's wrong and fix it. Can't fix it? Be busy fixing what you can. And what is God is saying after mentioning all of those mishaps? Rav lechem shevet b'har zeh. It's enough time sitting in that mount. Pnu su lachem, turn around, take the journey. And come to the land of the Amorite and to the promised land. And then verse 8, Re'eh natati lifnechem et haaretz. See, I gave you the land. See, vision. So instead of saying, oh, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad, said, okay, why did we go through the journey? Why did we fail? Because that's what people do, they fail. It's not a big problem. Why? That's normal. People do fail. However, if you don't fail, how would you know what's missing? How do you know where are your shortcomings? How do you know where is your blind spot? How do you know what's your mission? Because your mission is not where everything is perfect. The mission is where things are broken. As my teacher, Rabbi Peretz, used to say, when you deal with real estate, where is that you make the biggest amount of money? If you buy a new, sparkling, new, shining apartment or a house that was just like finished, and you buy it from the contractor, now how much money can you make on it? You know, how much can you sell it for? Not much, not so much of a difference when the market is normal, right? But so where you can make the big money? The big money is when you buy something that is chorev, ruined, destroyed, messed up, broken. Chorev. This is the name that the Torah is giving here to Sinai. I know it means coming out from what is broken. When you buy something that is broken, and then you put all what you've got, all your passion, and you hold on to vision, and you restore it, and you renovate it, and you rebuild it. Here is the big money. So, when you want to know where is the great success of your life, it's not where you are perfect. You know, every human being has some, great sides. This is not where you're going to make the great profit, because that's where the profit has been made already. Where are you going to make the great profit? What will make us feel elated more than anything else? Facing a destruction, a painful spot, a dark spot inside us. Focusing on that, believing in that, having a vision. Fighting for it, overcoming it, and turning it from a ruined, destroyed, shameful aspect of our personality into a shining, sparkling new venture of ourselves. So those broken real estate, pieces of real estate, That's when you make the greatest value, to make the greatest failure and profit. Same thing with us. What Moses is saying, what Rabbi Isaac Luria is explaining to us, all of those imperfections, all of those stuff that people are not spiritual enough, they say, you see, it's broken. So fix it. No, I want to tell you that the world is full of injustice. The world is faulty. The world is wrong. The world has no justice. The world is so broken beyond repair. These are the losers. The moment you say that, it's what you're saying. What can I do? Nothing I can do. It's broken. I'm broken. Everything's broken. It's hopeless. But this Shabbat is Shabbat Chazon. And what is Chazon? There's a vision that one day, if you read the book of Isaiah, what the greatest prophets that lived in Jerusalem, even Ezekiel, that most of his prophecies were made outside Jerusalem, but he, most of his life, he was born and raised in Jerusalem. What did they do? On one hand, they prophesied against all the atrocities that were committed by the Israelites. On the other hand, they were instilling the vision that humanity lives on that vision till today. I'm talking about that part of humanity that is what's called the winners, the ones that are not focused on the problem, but they are focused on the solution. You know, if you focus on the problem, there's no way you can find a solution. You're too obsessed, overcome by the problem. How can you find a solution? In order to find a solution, you need the special quality that is not just from Isaiah or Ezekiel or Jeremiah or Zachary, all of them. No. It's here the first time. Here is all what's wrong with us. And God spoke to us and he said, you can do it. That's your job. I'm not going to do it. You're going to do it. And if the name of the Haftarah is Chazon, Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amoz, the vision of Isaiah the son of Amoz. And that's why it's called Shabbat Chazon. But no, it's more than that. And here in verse 8, after the listing of all the imperfections and all the mistakes, it's not to erase guilt in us. How do I know? Verse 8 tells us, Re'eh natati lifnechem et haaretz. See, have a vision. Re'eh, chazon, they're not synonyms. But they cover very similar areas. Seeing is believing, which means when you see it, when you vision it, when you are so connected to the vision, to your dream, you'll believe in it. How? You pray for it, you imagine it. And why is it so important? We'll explain. And here it says, Natati, see, I'm giving you a vision. I'm giving you the land. Come and inherit the land. Asher nishba Adonai l'avotechem l'Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. You know, if Moses is telling the Israelites, bad kids you are. You're bad. So why does he add, see, I'm giving you the land that you're going to inherit? Should be, You're bad. I'm punishing you, disowning you, forgetting. No. Yes, you are evil. You have the evil inclination. This is part of the spot. You're not supposed to be perfect. If you're perfect, you're jobless. If you're perfect, you know, it means your days are numbered. Why? If you're perfect, you have nothing to do. This world that we are part of is not supposed to have perfection. This is the world of correction, Olam HaTikun. Okay? It's the world of correction. If you are here, there's something to correct. There's something to fix. Where is it? Raise your eyes, look around, you'll find it. See it's broken? Fix it. You see it's messed up? Organize it. Why me? Why are you here? That's your calling. So the idea that when it's broken, that's the time of fixing it. So let's go and when we say that along the whole parasha, on one hand, and it goes for the whole book of Deuteronomy, on one hand, Moses is speaking about all what's wrong with us. On the other hand, he keeps reminding us, Banim atem Hashem Elokechem, you are God's children. You are God's son, and you are God's son, and you are God's daughter. We are all God's children. And what does it mean? God never changes his decisions. He chose you to be special. He chose you to be a creator. He chose you to complete his creation. And that's not going to be changed. And if you're not going to get it this lifetime, you'll come another lifetime and another lifetime till finally you're going to do it right. That's called tikkun olam, correcting, fixing the world. Why is it important? Why this parasha is always being read on Shabbat Chazon, Shabbat before Tisha B'Av or on Tisha B'Av? And that's very simple. When we are talking about Tisha B'Av, what happened on Tisha B'Av, the ninth day of the Hebrew month of Leo, the ninth day after the new moon of Leo in the Hebrew calendar. So, on that day, and Moses mentions it over here, on that day happened the sin of the golden calf. That day, I'm sorry, the sin of the spies. That was 3 weeks and a year after the sin of the golden calf. Okay? So we have the conjunction with the two great sins of the Israelites in the desert. But also, when the Israelites reached a place of the highest level of idol worshiping, and the temple in Jerusalem, the first temple, was destroyed by the Babylonians, that was again the ninth day of the month of Av. And then the destruction of the second temple, that was on the ninth day of the month of Av. And then the destruction of Beitar, the rebellion of Bar Kokhba and Rabbi Akiva, ninth of Av again. And then the destruction of the Spanish Jewry and the expulsion of the biggest, most powerful, most flourishing Jewish community in the world from Spain. That was 1492, Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av. But if we look at it from that place, oh, it's a horrible day, Tisha B'Av. But if you just expand your sight, when there was a decree of the ninth of Av because of the spies, it's not the spies. The nation did listen to the spies who talked like victims, and everybody cried. What happened? They were judged, sentenced to death in the desert. So they died slowly every year on the ninth day of Av. More of them died. By the end of 40 years, they didn't die anymore. Now, what happened? A new generation was raised, a generation that was not raised as slaves in Egypt. You know, you talk about the great huge miracle of the establishment of the state of Israel. Most of the people that built the country from initiation were people who came either from the Holocaust, penniless, sometimes without any family, nothing. Basically, like the perfect image of the refugee in the lowest level. They were. Their dignity was taken away from them. Their homes were taken away from them. Their money was taken away from them. Their human dignity was deprived from them. They came as after being slaves for the 2,000 years of enslavery and discrimination and all of it. And then the epitome is like in the concentration camps. They were really slaves. They were numbers, like the lowest level that a human slave can be, with a threat of death. They were worth less than dogs. Okay? And now those people who survived it came and built a new nation. Same thing with the Jews who came from the Arab nations. In the Arab nations, there were in 1947 close to a million Jews. Okay? They lived there before the Arabs came there. They lived there since the Babylonians. We're talking about, the Jews of Iraq and Iran and Egypt. Okay, there were Jewish communities since 26 centuries ago, even in Tunisia. Okay, the rest of the communities were established already around 2,000 years ago, maybe a little less. Okay, they were there for years, always persecuted, always discriminated, always fearing, because being in a minority without any protection. And now the Arab League, after the establishment of the United Nations Declaration of Two-State Solution in 1947, the Arab League got together. Remember, the Arab League is on an area of 13 million square kilometers. The US is only 8 million. Okay? 13 million square kilometers, and they got together and made a decision secretly that now they are going to create a whole thing of rioting against all the Jews in their area. And now they're going to drive the Jews away and take all their possessions. We're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars worth of goods, savings, real estate. Just the real estate that the Jews owned in these countries was 100,000 square kilometers, five times the size of Israel. Okay? And there was an ethnic cleansing. The Jews left, so they came to Israel penniless, refugees. All of them, the Jews from Europe and the Jews from the Arab countries, came with a slave mentality. They were raised as, we call them in Israel the generation of the desert. They are the ones who are raised as a minority. And when you're a minority, you have kind of a victim-slave mentality. You've always been discriminated. You have to fight for your rights, or you have to lower your head and accept the beatings. And now, till you rise from that and you can create a real independent nation, it takes a while. You have to skip a generation. And that's what happened in the desert. So on one hand, the ninth of Av was a curse. It was a failure. But 40 years later, when the Israelites entering the land, it was after 40 years, there was a new generation that grew up without Egyptians, without feeling the whip or the stick or the bat of the Egyptians. They were raised as a free nation. They were ready to take the promised land and establish an independent nation. Sometimes you need to have that. And what's the result? A new nation was established. When we are talking about the ninth of Av, destruction of the first temple was a horrible disaster. Some historians say the Jewish nation never recuperate from that, because it was after 1,000 years of since the Exodus, 1,000 years of not being a slaves to anyone. And now you're slaves again in Babylonia, in Egypt, you're a minority again, a persecuted minority without any securities, any even the right for protection. But that was an opportunity. And when the second temple is being established, a new era of creativity, a new civilization, Jewish civilization has raised. So when there was the rebellion of the Hashmonaim, the Maccabees, and the building and the completion of the Mishnah, the Zohar, the Talmud, that created a new, a really totally new civilization out of the ashes, out of the destruction. And when the second temple was destroyed, and there was a new creativity that came after that. And one of these results was Rabbi Akiva and his students. They left us with the Mishnah and the Zohar. That was a result for the Ninth of Av. Okay? And when the Spanish Jewry has been destroyed, eliminated, what came out of it? The golden era of Tzfat. Like a huge creativity. Not just in Tzfat, but all of that, the Jewish world like was resurrected during the century afterwards and afterwards. The Arizal, oh, the recreation of Kabbalah, all of that. So you have a choice. You can look at the dark side or the bright side. If you look at the dark side, it will be going to be painful. And it's going to be more painful. The more you look at it, the more you focus on it, it's going to be more painful. Till you say, I've had enough. And you look at the bright side. And you start the journey of the correction. So the whole thing of these night of this time of the year is about when you have the vision, you can forgive, especially yourself. Why? I fell, but what other choice do I have? If I stick to my calling, to my vision, what's the vision? Again, when the destruction of the second temple happened, and the temple at that time in Jerusalem was the most magnificent, the greatest, the richest temple in the Roman world. Right? Just remember, all the great temples in the Roman world were city temples. They were serving a local population. The only temple that served a nation with a national identity, that the nation that spread from Babylonia and Persia all the way to Spain. In Germany, that was a temple in Jerusalem. Jews from all over donated a special donation, the half a shekel, to that temple that served millions and millions of people. So it was rich, it was huge, it was powerful, it was famous. Okay, that's why the Romans were reluctant about destroying it. They appreciated the beauty, they wanted it for themselves. That's why Titus said, do not touch the temple, destroy the people. Don't touch the building. I want it for myself. And then somebody set it on fire. You know, you can be Titus, you can be a great general. You don't control everything. Was not the time. But what important for us is that idea that it doesn't matter how terrible it is, you always have to remember that God loves you beyond what you can imagine. That God's love towards you cannot be changed. God created you as his child, and that is not negotiable. You're always going to be God's child because God never changes his mind. So, he can remind you your mistakes, but not to downgrade you. It's just to give you like a push. You see, this is wrong. Why? Go fix it. I trust you can fix it. So when God reveals to us our mistakes, it's not because he wants to tell us how bad you are. That's a terrible, terrible, very limited angle of seeing things. It's a manipulation of dark religions and cults. You're guilty, you're guilty, you're guilty. It's your ego, it's your ego. God never does that. When God tells you that went wrong, it's because he wants you to fix it, because he believes you can fix it, because you have no other choice by fixing it. You won't fix it today, fix it tomorrow, not tomorrow, the day after. All is well if the end is well. If it's not well, it's not the end. Why? God will never leave you. That is the message of the book of Deuteronomy. So you don't have to tell God, oh God, please forgive me. I had you by hello. And after all of these things, when Moses is saying something that is so, so powerful, Moses is speaking about the next leadership. And he's saying, I spoke to you, that's verse 9. I spoke to you at that time, and I said, I could not lead you on my own. And then verse 10. Adonai Elohechem yirba etchem v'inchem hayom kekochvei hashamayim la'ov. The God, your Lord, multiplied you. And now you are like, you're so many, like the stars in the heavens. And what's the next verse? Adonai Eloi Avotechem Yosef Alechem Kachem Elef Pe'amim. Vivarech Etchem Kasher Diber Lachem. The Lord, the God of your forefathers, will add upon you, like you, 1,000 times more, and will bless you, like he promised you. And the Zohar is saying something very important. The Zohar is saying we have here a lesson about Moses is teaching us. If you read these words, you cannot not see Moses' deep love towards the nation. The nation he led for 40 years. He's not trying to get even with us. He loves us. And the Zohar says we learn from that. It's not, you don't have a Zohar on Dvarim. It's scattered in many other places. But the Zohar is saying, this is in Parashat Bamidbar. Yeah, it's Parashat Bamidbar in the beginning. And it says, when God is blessing the people, he's blessing them and continues to blessing. Why? He's infinite. So his blessings are infinite, they're not limited. And the Zohar says, come and see. Whoever speaks about the bliss of somebody else, could be a friend, children, whatever, which means you speak about the bliss that your friend has. He has nice kids, he is successful, he has a beautiful house, a lot of money, whatever. When you speak about it, there's a rule. First of all, do it with a good eye. Do it with, be excited about, be happy with him for his whatever he has. Then you should bless him about it and should be thankful for God for the success of your friend of that or that any other person. How do we know? For Moses, because he says, God multiplied you. You're like the stars of the heavens, so many. And then immediately he says, and I bless you that God will give you 1,000 times more. Whenever you say you see somebody's success, you bless him. I wish that you continue to be blessed, and I wish you that you'll be even blessed 1,000 times more. Because if you're not really happy about your friend's success, and you're not kind of, he doesn't deserve it. Who does he think he is? How did he get it? You know how people do. There's also when you are not really happy with another person's success, you're cursing yourself. You're cursing yourself. You think, why is he so excited? Why is he so happy? Why is he so successful? Which means you doubt it. What you do is you doubt it, you basically block your own flow of bliss. You want yourself to be happy? Be happy with other people's success. When you're happy with other people's success, then you'll be able to be also happy with your success. You know, who is raining on our parade? Usually it's us. And one of the biggest tikkunim for that we have to take is, when things are going good, don't go with guilt. Be thankful and say, okay, if God gives me that, how should I be thankful? What should I do with the gifts I've got in order to make the world a better place? So you bless others with the bliss that you received. When you are focused on that aspect, you'll be a successful human being. However, when you're busy with what's wrong with me, what's wrong with others, how guilty I am for all the mistakes that I made, how I don't deserve to be successful, all of that stuff, you're basically not accepting the challenge. Your calling, the purpose of your creation. So all of these people that are professional victims, it's not going to be better if you'll give it up. All of those people that are professional complainers, they always rain on other people's parade. That's never going to help you. The more you curse, the more you complain, the more you can't stand other people's success. The more you curse yourself. And what does it mean, curse yourself? You're blocking God's bliss. God's bliss is flow. So either you join them or you fight them. And if you fight them, you can't. You're not part of the big tikkun process. You go against the grain of the programming of all of humanity. So, and it's all concentrated on that part that I always read in Parashat Chazon, Shabbat Chazon, from Ohev Yisrael, the Octa Rebbe, that he speaks about Shabbat Chazon, that Shabbat Chazon yoter gadol b'malah mikol Shabbatot Hashana, where it says in the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, in the most important book of Jewish laws that was accepted by all Jewish communities around the world in the 16th century as the base of all Jewish laws. And it says over there, there's no holiday like Shabbat Chazon. Shabbat before Tisha B'Av, I mean, if it's Shabbat on Tisha B'Av, it's even greater. It's bigger than all the Shabbatot over the year, bigger than all the holidays. Vupele, this is a wonder. And the answer is, and I just make it do it short. He says in the Talmud, Tractate Yevamot, page 62b, when a person is leaving his wife for a business trip, in all ancient times, you could go, let's say, for a business trip, either from Israel, you could go to Spain or to India, there were trips going that way. But today it can take a few weeks, a few months. Those days it took years. Before you leave your wife for the journey, you have, it says in the Talmud, to visit her, to be with her. And when you do that, God is giving you a special power to instill with her a power, a vision. So she will trust. Remember, no means of communication those days. So how should she know that you were not kidnapped, drowned, killed, murdered, whatever, died from a plague, and you're coming back, and she'll stay loyal to you. By being with her before you leave, God will help you to instill in her that vision, that faith, to trust that you're coming so she can be patient enough. And Rab and the Opti Rebbe is saying, that's what the Kabbalists are saying. On, if we are saying that, that's exactly what we're talking about. On the ninth of Av, the Shabbat, and ninth of Av was Shabbat, it was Shabbat Chazon. On that Shabbat, just before the Jewish nation is starting its journey of traumas, persecutions, slavery, darkness, going very deep into sorrow and pain and faith. In faith of what? God instilled within the Jewish nation on that day the power of vision. A vision that a day will come that the world will be a place of justice, that there will be a return of all the exiles back to Zion. That's why it's called Zionism. The faith was so strong that that kept those Jews who survived till today, that, it's worthwhile fighting for it. Some generations, most of the Jews could not hold on to it. Either they were forced to convert, or they simply did convert because they lost hope. How long can I go against the flow of the stream? Everybody goes this way, and I'm fighting it. And I'm discriminated, I'm stepped on, I'm a slave. But the Jews who stayed Jewish, they're the ones that stayed Jewish because of that touch, that union with God's vision, that union that gave that vision that no matter what happens, no matter what mistakes I'm going to make, no matter what punishment I'm going to go through, no matter what through what pain and sorrow and darkness, injustice I'm going to experience, the day will come, we'll be back. It will be back. And when the time came, and now we can see these prophecies are coming through. And as the prophets were saying, and all of those people will come from many, many nations and gather to the barren mountains of Israel that were barren, deserted, bald, which means no vegetation for so many years. And there we will build the mountains, the cities, and it will settle them and flourish. And the whole world will see the flourishment. They will see how miraculously the land of Israel is going to be resurrected. Okay? Now that we can see that that happened, when did that happen? When the vision was installed, instilled. And installed in each one of us 2,000 years in the ninth of Av, Shabbat Chazon. So whoever feels this desperate, weak, loss of hope, all of that pain and stress and that and loss of hope, this is the source. Why is it stronger than all the holidays? Because remember, on Rosh Hashanah, coming soon, on Rosh Hashanah, we get the bliss, the power, the life force to feed us for 1 year. And that lasts for the process of Rosh Hashanah takes 3 weeks from Rosh Hashanah to Simchat Torah. On Pesach, we get the power to overcome chametz, the negativity. For 1 year, which means the greatest holidays on Yom Kippur, we get the power of life for 1 year. The power to overcome negativity for 1 year. On Shabbat Chazon, we got the power for 2,000 years. And as the Arizal is saying, Rabbi Zachariah, the moment something so great is happening, it is engraved in the universe and every year with the same astronomical, astrological forces join, rejoin together. The same beam of energy is being resurrected and it's playing all over again. Yes, it's a day of disaster, but it's a day that the seed of hope of Mashiach was planted in each one of us. This is the time this week to forgive for everything. Realize it's nothing against me. It was all done to give me an opportunity to correct what I missed by now and to welcome and appreciate the faith, the hope, and rekindle that vision that gave the power to so many people to be invincible. So great empires who tried to destroy the vision of Moses, that burned the books, that forbid learning them. All of these empires of darkness, either it was that persecuted our forefathers, either it was Rome or Byzantium or other empires, they just in the trash bin of history. And the vision of Isaiah is inscribed, you want it or not, on the walls of the UN. In the UN, they continue to do what the other nations did in the past. It's stronger than you. You don't understand that, fools. You're going to the trash can of history, and that vision will last forever. You want to be part of it? Never give hope. This is the time to connect to that transformation. If it's negative, yes, but that's for me to transform. Thank you so much, and good luck in the journey. We're getting closer and closer.